Hello, and welcome to episode 13 of Juiced Balls. I'm Brad Johnson. Our guest today is Aaron Pags, also known as @FantasyTriage on Twitter. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, Brad. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show. It's always good to have a new face.
Yeah, pretty new to the fantasy baseball landscape. Not new to playing fantasy baseball, but started writing about fantasy football about 3 years ago, and that kind of caught on. Got a little bit of traction there, and got affiliated with fantasyinframes.com and Jorge Edwards over there. And Jorge approached me in the football, later stages of football season, and said, "Hey, man, I know you know a lot about baseball. How about opening up a second half to my website and being the lead editor and starting a fantasy baseball podcast? By the way, I've already set everything up for you, so let's go."
All right, so I think I've pieced together why your Twitter handle is Fantasy Triage from our talking offline, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself beyond the fantasy aspects?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am an emergency room nurse, one of these folks that you hear a lot about on the news today. I am, quote unquote, on the front lines of COVID-19, swabbing noses left and right, although thankfully the Charleston, South Carolina area has been spared thus far, and we haven't come into contact with a large number of positives.
Well, that's fortunate for now. Hopefully it holds up as things start to open up a little bit throughout the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that as long as we are practicing safe distancing and washing our hands, wearing masks around large crowds of people, I think that this is something that can be held at bay at best.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump into the action. I did not share this first scenario with you. It's not really scenarios so much. In the past, I've mentioned on the show that I do a little bit of a pre-show interview. Mostly, I just ask for people to volunteer some information. And you volunteered quite a bit. And I think what interested me the most about it was your long list of dislikes. Can we go through them?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. The first one was cake or any baked desserts. And you can't see this, but I'm raising my eyebrow at you. Why do you hate joy?
Man, I knew you were going to come at me with something out of left field here. Okay, so cake to me is just, it's a little too heavy. When I want something sweet, I'd rather something really kind of light, something I can just kind of like, I don't like to be overpowered with sweetness or have that really full stomach afterwards. Call me like the anti-glutton, if you will. I'd rather just snack on like two or three Sour Patch Kids and call it a night.
Okay. What about angel food cake? That's a little lighter and less sweet.
Yeah, angel food cake, not bad. I mean, that's like that's the closest thing to a cake that you'll probably get me to say I've enjoyed. It needs to have just like a little bit of light fruit on there too.
This way
I can eat the fruit mostly and then kind of pawn off the cake on maybe somebody next to me.
Okay. Next up was cheese. You do not enjoy cheese.
Okay.
How many cheeses have you tried?
Yeah, I've tried a lot of cheese in my life. I won't say that I absolutely dislike cheese. This is what I'll say about cheese. I won't go out of my way to make sure there's cheese on something. So if I order a burger and it happens to come with cheese already predetermined, I'll eat the cheeseburger. And same thing with maybe like a deli sandwich. I certainly will never, ever grab a piece of cheese and just insert the cheese into my mouth. Not a fan of that. Not a fan of a mozzarella stick. Just something about maybe the sour, maybe my sour taste buds are just a little bit on the fritz here. And I just, the cheese just tastes very sour to me, most of them.
Interesting. I would get that with like a goat's cheese, but not mozzarella. Mozzarella's the least sour, I think. It's just, it doesn't taste like anything, really.
Yeah, cheese and I have not had a great relationship, I guess, just because I haven't found the one. Now, if you have one that I've maybe never heard of before that you want me to try, I'll write this down and I'll get back to you on it.
I think the ones that I have in mind are stronger, I'll say. So you're not going to like them if you don't like the mild ones, I don't think. Let's move along to number three. It's bad breath. Okay.
Okay. So, you know, everyone knows someone. Okay. This is my own personal fear. I fear that when I'm talking to someone, all they're thinking about is that, man, when was the last time Aaron brushed his teeth? So maybe I'm projecting my fear of my own bad breath onto others. I don't get very close when I talk to people, and I talk very loud for that reason, so that if I get a hint of bad breath, I'm going to stay much further away from you than, I guess now this works out perfect for me with the virus and having to stand 6 feet away.
I kind of picture like a perfect stranger walking up to you and just like leaning in, they say, you know, I can't stand bad breath. And then you just walk away. You're left bewildered.
That's a nightmare scenario. Someone sneaking up on me when I can't get my hand to my face to kind of like to shield my nose from someone's breath.
Next on your list was 30-year-old Yankee fans. And we probably could have done a full stop there, but you provide a little more detail. You specifically dislike the ones who lay claim to all 27 titles.
Man, their grandparents didn't even see most of these championships. It's crazy. I grew up about a 35, 40-minute train ride to Yankee Stadium. And as a Mets fan, that is brutal, right? We just are surrounded by Yankee culture growing up in the 90s outside of New York City. And so, man, every conversation that you had with these folks, these real friendly, obviously not drunk people, they just referenced these titles that they knew absolutely nothing about and lay claim to in every way.
Number five was eating outdoors with bugs. I'm glad you volunteered this.
Yeah. So my wife loves to have, we have this little screened in area and right outside of our dining room. And she loves to say, hey, why don't you go outside, throw some food on the grill, and we'll eat outside. Won't that be nice? It's so nice out. And all I can think of is the easement behind our house and all the trees and all the bugs that live in the trees and all these bugs that are just waiting for me to put my plate down and to fly up and just touch my food. I don't want bugs near my food. Hence, I do not even want to risk it by eating outside.
You know, I went to South Africa in November to go on safari, and we did a good deal of eating outdoors, and at dinner there would usually be giant bugs just like kind of crawling in your food. You gotta just pick them out and flick them away, which is my way of saying don't go on safari.
Yeah, I'm gonna cross that off my bucket list for sure.
Last on your list was movies. They lack depth. Can I take this to mean you also dislike short stories?
No, actually, I don't dislike short stories. I think that I enjoy reading shorter pieces than longer pieces, and I enjoy watching longer pieces than I do shorter pieces, if that makes sense. Because there's a lot more effort in reading, right, than there is in sure, watching. Sure. So I prefer a short story over a long series when it comes to writing. As far as watching movies, this is my probably boldest take. It's just I don't get invested in an hour, and I need to be invested before the hour, right? Because if you're not invested at the 1 hour mark, you're certainly not going to get paid off at the end of the movie. And so I have found myself actually just not watching movies, and maybe things have changed in the last half decade or so with big time feature films. But you'll have to tell me, because I can't see myself really moved by a 2 hour production.
Yeah, I wouldn't say anything's really changed too much. They've hit on some formulas that maybe are aimed more at our generation. I'm going to assume you're roughly of the same age as me.
Yeah. So I guess the biggest factor lately has been the concentration on comic book heroes. And I was not a comic book person growing up. And so to get into the comics in my early 30s would be a really bizarre twist for me.
Yeah. I was never a comic book guy myself, but I have enjoyed the movies. I really liked the first Iron Man, which was kind of kicked off a lot of this current wave. And it's had its ebbs and flows. You can get into various arguments, and I just don't care enough about the specifics. There's a few that I liked more than others, and there's a few that I disliked a little bit, and mostly they're just action movies cast with superheroes.
Yeah, I guess standalone value is what I'm looking for when I'm looking for a movie. And so those movies that are within a universe, those might be interesting to me. I just haven't been able to get into the comic book universes quite yet.
Yeah. It sounds like, though, maybe not the comic book universe specifically, but the idea of having like a universe and a wider range of movies that all, well, hit along a similar storyline, that might be a way to get you interested in movies specifically.
Sure, something that I can invest in and know, like, hey, there's like 7 more of these coming out in the next 10 years. So really kind of hone in on the characters and let them develop over time. I think I appreciate good character development. And I'm sure that there is some value into just purely entertaining and laughing. And, you know, I'll watch Step Brothers if it's on or something like that and just kind of laugh. But no real other value that I can see from a movie.
All right. Well, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know you dislike?
Oh, man. Maybe we get to... Well, I'm sure we're going to hit on some other things that I dislike as we go along here. But let's maybe move on to some things that I like baseball.
Okay. Well, the next scenario, I don't know. It's a little serious. I usually try to be quirky and funny. This one's... I wouldn't say it's a typical juice balls prompt, but I hope it's fun for you. It's kind of aimed at your job, and you're certainly free to take any direction with it. You don't have to go serious if you don't want to. So all that aside, with your background, you're probably more qualified to speak on the topic of baseball coming back. We're in the midst of COVID-19, if you happen to be listening far in the future. And we're kind of wondering, are we going to have a baseball season in 2020? So could you tell us what your 5-point plan would be to bring baseball back? And is it even possible?
So I'm glad you had me on, and I hope that Major League Baseball is listening, because I think that maybe not just to me, but I hope Major League Baseball is listening to medical experts and not necessarily getting too in depth into the political discussions that kind of go along with this, right side or left side.
Right.
I think let's get somewhere in the middle. Let's find some medical people who understand, some epidemiologists, some actual medical doctors who understand how viruses work, and let's listen to them and not focus on all the other things that seem to kind of muffle their voice. And so when you asked me to come up with a 5-point plan, there was a couple ways I could go with this, and I took it actually seriously, because I think that someone is going to have to take this seriously, obviously. And I don't think it's even just about baseball, right? Like, this baseball has a rare opportunity right now to put themselves out there and do something and do it well and be the model for, I don't know, football for once. You know, like, we are always in the shadow of the NFL. And really, I think that Major League Baseball has a prime opportunity amongst this really terrible public health situation that's going on right now to really get this right. And I think when I get here to my 5-point plan, I think I want you to focus on the order that I place these in, because I think the order is the most important in any plan going forward to actually get baseball back. And so we're going to start first by saying, the first point of this plan is to protect the vulnerable public. That's step one. Nothing else can come before this step, okay? And that means, sadly, no fans. You can't have fans at this point. Not just no fans, but I think we need to limit who has access to the players and who has access to the teams. And that might mean that there's less media and there's a little bit less coverage and not the best camera angles or the best mics, or we're not going to get... you know, managers' opinions after every game. We're going to need to change somewhere, and I think we need to change for protection and protect the public. So I want them to wear masks. I want the higher risk staff members to wear masks. I know that masks are a bit of a touchy subject here, but masks can't hurt when you wear them, right? Masks do no harm. And so they can only provide another layer, another variable that can help prevent a breakout. And also, when we're talking about protecting the public, we need to play at venues that require fewer staff to operate. And I don't know that this is being really hammered home yet, but I know they've been some leaks about playing in Arizona, Texas, and Florida and not playing in the home stadiums or something to that effect. This is a great idea because those complexes, those stadiums, they take far fewer staff members to operate than, say, Yankee Stadium, right? And so if we're putting less people at risk, this public, if we can protect the public, not just the players, but number one, we need to protect the public, I think we're headed in the right path. And that leads me to step two, the second most important thing, and that's protecting the players, coaches, and umpires, right? The people who are on the field. So this means testing regularly. Whether that means testing every Wednesday and Sunday, whether a player comes in and says, hey, I need to be tested, and the test is readily available to them, has to be, must be, we need to have that. Folks who are not participating in the game, folks who are on the bench, in the dugout, they should be wearing masks. People in the bullpen, they should be wearing masks. Umpires who are maybe not the home plate umpire, or I'm not sure how that may work, but they should have the option to wear a mask, the umpires. Staff who's not in the game, trainers, et cetera, coaches, they need to be wearing masks. The players on the field, I think that's optional. I think that raises a safety risk. Masks getting in your eye when a ball's headed your way, players colliding, running in the outfield with a mask on. Doesn't, you know, I'm sure that someone much more tech than I could come up with a mask that doesn't move when you're in a full sprint, but who am I? And not just masks. I think the one thing that that we are certain does the trick against this virus is hand washing. And so I'd recommend the players wash their hands in between batters, maybe at least in between every half inning. I mean, have a sponsor, a major league sponsor, this is the hand sanitizer of Major League Baseball, whomever that is, and have a pause between batters and show the Major League Baseball players taking this seriously and washing their hands. And it might go even out to the public and get people to wash their hands.
Well, one thing I've not seen talked about much is it's very common. I grew up as a pitcher and we go to our mouths a lot. We want to get some fluid on our hands to rough up the ball. We want to do something to load the baseball a little bit, get a little extra cut. So we're constantly touching our faces. That's going to be something that needs to be addressed too.
Certainly going to have to be something that is I would say more than limited. I don't think a pitcher could wear a mask, but, and I don't know that you can totally eliminate a pitcher from licking his fingers. Perhaps we have to figure out a way to sterilize the baseball in between half innings, clean it off, reuse baseballs so we're not using a million. I mean, I know Major League Baseball prints money, so maybe we could just get a, you know, how many pitches are in a baseball game? 260, 270? Can we get 270 baseballs per game in a shortened season? I don't know. Okay, so that's the first two things, right? The first two things, protect the public, protect the folks on the field. Then we got to try this out. We can't have a regular season before we have spring training. We haven't really had a true spring training, right? So we need to put this all into play, and we need to find out what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong and what's working. I know Major League Baseball has participated in an antibody study, which I'm curious to find out the results. Perhaps they can use that antibody study during this 14-day trial to kind of separate those with antibodies from those without antibodies when they're housing them in these maybe hotels nearby or wherever they determine that the players need to be housed, because they're likely not, they're going to try to limit travel, I imagine, for sure. And then you need to set a line where there's an immediate shutdown, and it needs to be a hard line. And whether that's the number of players that test positive or the percentage of staff that were sent home, whatever that number is, we need to go into the season fully prepared to shut it all down and move on to 2021 in this 14-day trial period. I think 14 days will give us a good understanding of what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. And that's step three. And then we got to get onto the season. Now we're into to step four here, and I hear a lot of talk about how can they make this season not a sham. How many games will give this season the respect that it deserves? I don't care how many games there are played. I don't know about you, Brad, but I want to watch baseball.
Don't care.
Yeah, and I don't care.
Games out there, we can put asterisks on it at the end of the year if we want to. It doesn't matter. Play baseball. Yeah,
let history decide whether this season was a total joke or what. But I think that there's actually a model that we can take after. When I say we, I say Major League Baseball can take after for the 2020 season that already exists. And it's something similar to how college plays, the kind of an extended version of how the NCAA plays their season, where there's about 4 to 5 games per week, mostly on the weekend. Teams minimally travel. And we can play this over 13 weeks. Season can end at the same time. We can start in the beginning of July and end in October. Get about 4 or 5 games a week. That gets you to like 72 games, with the showcase games being Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, Jacob DeGrom is your Friday night pitcher, or, you know, whomever. We get these big matchups every Friday night, and baseball is the center of attention. You know, try something like that. It already exists. It works on a smaller scale for colleges. So why not do that? Why not incorporate some kind of flow similar to the NCAA season that was? What are your thoughts on playing like an NCAA season?
I like the idea. I love the idea of having just like set days where you know the aces are going and so on. But I'm struggling at first blush to imagine the scheduling. That seems like a nightmare to get enough movement with a 30-team league to get something resembling a balanced schedule.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Three leagues: Arizona, Texas, Florida. 10 teams in each league.
Okay, right.
Right. So
we've got that strategy.
So we go with that strategy. We play the other 9 teams a total of 8. We play them 8 times each.
That makes
so
a lot
four in my
sense.
Ballpark. Yeah, 4 in my ballpark, 4 in yours, and we schedule travel accordingly. I mean, you know, there's an algorithm that can figure out the travel and get it narrowed down. So that's 72 games right there.
Okay. The last couple of days, they've been talking about playing in like regular stadiums and, you know, having kind of normal travel basically. And I think the college plan works less for that. But if you're clustering into 3 kind of small areas, it seems a lot more reasonable and even desirable.
Yeah, it's harder to trace when we're tracing the entire country, right? If we have an outbreak, if we have an outbreak in Cincinnati, where does that actually affect? But, you know, but they're in San Francisco when we find out that they 9 guys on the team tested positive 2 days ago. You know, it's a lot harder to kind of contain if you're traveling all about the country than in these smaller compound type of places.
It's a little more irresponsible too. It's opening the league up to some negative PR if they're bringing in the disease into areas where it's not as prevalent and possibly passing it around.
Absolutely.
Got these smaller units, it's probably coming from, you know, the local population rather than from you traveling around so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that leads me to point 5. If you're going to have a season, you got to have a champion. And so Omaha does it in college baseball. And I know I focus a lot on the college baseball. Put them all in one spot, have a tournament. I don't care how many teams are in it. It doesn't matter to me. Best of 3, the best teams are going to win. This is baseball. The best pitchers are going to win when you play a best of 3 series. And so, you know, you can have a legit champion regardless of how many teams you put into a tournament style, similar to the Omaha NCAA style, and have it in one location, put it in Las Vegas where they can close off. I read something where Las Vegas wanted to close off like 1/3 of the strip and play all the NBA and WNBA and NHL games and just house all of the players in those resorts. This would be like the perfect thing for baseball to, maybe not Las Vegas, but, you know, somewhere where it's warm weather, and they can just kind of separate the players from everyone else. So you don't have this abrupt stop in your postseason. That's, you know, that's the most important time to make sure you've got a real handle on it. We're also talking about a time where we could see a second wave if there's no vaccine in place. And so, you know, it would be an unmitigated disaster for baseball should, like, October 15th, we've played all these games and now we're about to venture into the playoffs and, you know, the New York Yankees all have coronavirus.
Yeah, true. I think there's two obvious solutions to the playoff question. It's Arizona, or you could also go to Texas. The new Globe Life Stadium would be a great venue for a championship series, I think. Feature a new park and warm weather.
Yeah, so that's my 5-part plan. Protect the public, protect the people on the field, 14-day trial and spring training, 72 NCAA style games with focus on the weekends and the Omaha style tournament.
Yep, I like it. It's a good plan. Hopefully we can find something like that and put it into action. I do worry about the league's kind of money grubbing tendencies, I'll say. They haven't had the best recent history with making wise decisions either in the short or the long term. So far, so good with the COVID choices. But I still worry that they'll kind of get out ahead of themselves with something.
Yeah, I don't think they actually made the COVID choices. I think that choice was made for them.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt for now. They haven't been, besides saying they're optimistic that they'll play, they haven't been too overly emphatic that, you know, they're definitely going to do this and it's going to be at, you know, everyone's expense. They're still talking about and saying the right things.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, let's move on to the third scenario. Before the show, you mentioned you're a huge Mets fan. So what's your favorite Mets era?
I still actually, when you asked me this question, sent it to me, I thought back to when my favorite moment as a Mets fan was, and like, I've had some pretty fun moments. I've been at Shea Stadium for some pretty fun games, but actually my favorite moment as a Mets fan was May 22nd, 1998, when the Mets made a trade for Mike Piazza. Traded Preston Wilson. Yeah, Preston Wilson, Ed Yarnell, and Jeffrey Getz. And now the Mets didn't make the playoffs in 98, but it was the first real chance in my life for me to see the Mets kind of involved. I was too young in 86 and 87 and 88. And so it was my first real chance in my life to really experience a good playoff push, an exciting end to the season. And Mike Piazza really gave that to me. We came up one game short, of course. And then, you know, in typical Mets fashion, that era ended with a loss to the Yankees in the World Series. And then in 2004, the reboot, Pedro signed on I think it was just before Christmas, like a week before Christmas in 2004. And of course, that brought along Delgado and Beltran and others, and we had a little bit of a fun ride there until that ended tragically in 2006 when Beltran is still standing in the batter's box. So to go along with what I love and what I hate, there's a real fine line in my likes and dislikes, and I think that makes me a really good Mets fan from like the late 90s until about 2006. It's about the era that I enjoyed the most.
Okay. If you had an opportunity to have dinner with a Mets player, who would it be?
I'm gonna cop out on this and say that I'd rather not have dinner with a player. I'd rather have dinner with the Mets booth. I'd rather go out to dinner. Yeah, I'd rather go out to dinner with Gary Cohen, Keith Hernandez, and Rod Darling. Nothing there. I've watched a lot of sports and I've listened to a lot of the greats talk. You know, Vin Scully and you know, Marv Albert and all these guys, no one can really truly make it sound like they're just a bunch of dudes sitting around watching baseball quite like Gary Cohen, Keith Hernandez, and Ron Darling. Of course, you know, Keith mentions his cat every night and he's out there talking about all the cocaine that the Mets did back in the 80s. And then Ron Darling's trying to be like the goody two shoes. And like, he downplays his, how good of a pitcher he was and kind of chaps fun at himself, and Gary Cohen knows everything that's ever happened in the history of the Mets organization. And so this would be one of the more entertaining dinners for sure that I could imagine.
Yeah, that's a good good twist, and I always welcome twists on Juiced Balls. I have some bad news, though. Major League Baseball has decided to contract two teams in answer to COVID-19. They've opted to cut the two least solvent clubs, and it turns out the Mets, their balance sheet's really bad, and so they're one of them. How do you react?
Freedom at last. this is the most timely question you could have asked me. I just put up a poll on Twitter, actually, at Fantasy Triage, about is it okay to get rid of your team that you've rooted for since you were a kid? And do you need a reason? And for some reason, I can't get rid of the Mets. I don't know if loyalty is stupid, but I would be... I thought that I was at the funeral for the Mets already. I was there the night, the day game, actually, that they lost in the final day at Shea Stadium before they were going to tear it down. And they decided in all the Mets glory to trot out like Mets greats and Mr. Met after they just lost a heartbreaker to the Marlins on the last day of the season to miss the playoffs. And it was the most awkward celebration, just booing and booing and booing from the fans, and then walking out in silence after spending years at Shea Stadium. I thought that was the funeral for the Mets, but this would be quite a party if they contracted the Mets. I think I would have just fond memories of the team and then move on to the next. I think I don't know if that makes me a bad fan, but it looks like a way out to me.
Would you try to find a new team, or would you follow specific players? What would be the plan?
Ah, oh, man, I think I would just focus on watching great players. I think a lot of times we get really tied up in watching our team, and we kind of miss the greats because maybe they are on a team that we dislike. Like, we go to a Mets Braves game in 1999, and all we chant is Larry instead of enjoying how good Chipper Jones was, you know? And so I think that would be a different way to approach baseball, and something that I probably welcome, just kind of watching the greats.
Okay. Yeah. That's how I approach as a fantasy player. I grew up a Phillies fan, and I still kind of have a light fandom for them. I also really enjoy this low Mets era. It's entertaining on two levels for me, just because I grew up dealing with Mets fans coming down to our park and being obnoxious, and now I can laugh at them a good amount, but also just in a general sense, every league needs its comic relief, and the low Mets provide that.
you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. So number four, the fourth scenario, you described yourself as a pretty decent mixologist, so I'm going to set you some scenarios, and we're going to try to pair some appropriate drinks to them. So, for example, let's say you went to the concession stand and bought a hot dog, and I asked you what you pair with it. You'd probably want a beer of some kind. So, yeah, you with me so far with that?
Yep.
Okay. So, you've gone to the bathroom with the Mets trailing by 3 runs. When you come back, the game is tied. What drink do you pair with this moment?
Awesome. A comeback when I wasn't watching. Typical. I'd probably, in all my stupid superstitions, or probably my section would tell me to go back to the bathroom. But if I was able to snag a drink in that moment, or mix one up for everybody in my section, it'd be a Cosmopolitan. Why a Cosmo, though? Because it's like just a little sweet, but it's not totally going to do the trick. Kind of like that 3-run comeback in the fifth inning. You know, it's like kind of sweet, but you also know that you're going to need a little more to get over the top.
And remind us what goes into a Cosmopolitan.
Oh yeah, Cosmo. It's about an ounce and a half of citrus vodka, 1 ounce of triple sec, a little bit of lime juice, and stir in. Make sure when you're pouring the cranberry juice, you stir it in there. That makes all the difference.
Okay. All right. So Jeff McNeil has hit for the cycle, and now the Mets are leading. What drink would you hand him after the game?
Oh, man, the legend of the squirrel, right? Jeff McNeil. The legendary feat that is hitting a single, double, triple home run deserves a legendary drink. So a feat accomplished like that should get itself a martini, similar to something that James Bond would drink, the legend himself.
Okay. Unfortunately, Edwin Diaz has coughed up a go-ahead home run in the top of the ninth. You need a drink, which will keep your spirits up for the home half of the inning. What are you sipping?
Okay, here's a drink you've never heard of. And it's called, or maybe you have. I shouldn't sell you short here. It's called a penicillin. Have you ever heard of it?
I have not.
Okay, a penicillin is, you mash up some ginger. You put 2 ounces of scotch, 1 ounce of lemon juice, a little bit of honey, and you shake it, then you strain it and pour it in a glass with ice, okay? And the reason why when Diaz blows another save that you need a penicillin is because that's just another tough pill to swallow. See where I'm going here with these things?
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I've had that many times for when I'm sick, just without the scotch.
Without the scotch. Yeah, add the scotch next time. It'll knock it right out.
Good to know. I will certainly have to try.
Well, actually, I should take that back. For those of you listening, that is not medical advice.
I know some people who swear by just like downing a ton of alcohol as their solution to I'm getting a cold. I just shake my head like that'll just kill me.
yeah, probably.
All right, so the Mets end up losing, and Pete Alonso has to go on the IL. What do you drink to drown your sorrows?
I mean, this isn't classic lull Mets here. I mean, seriously. This is like old-fashioned classic. Pour me an old-fashioned. That's the drink that will, man, kind of soothe me, I guess, like a little baby Mets fan. Give me an old-fashioned. Make sure it's got a nice big ice cube in it. Lots of sugar, because we need to sugarcoat it as best we can.
All right, the Wilpons show up at your house for happy hour. What
I'm
do you mix
home.
For them?
Oh.
You're not home.
Okay, Fred and Jeff show up at my door. And the first words out of their mouths are, "We're selling the team." I quickly run to the refrigerator. I grab the champagne that's been on ice since 2006, Eddie Chavez robbing the home run, and I pop champagne. But they laugh and say, "Just kidding. We're never selling the team." So we go outside and tap that skunked old keg that I have sitting in my backyard from before I was married.
Gross.
Yeah.
After the Wilpons leave, you realize they stole some of your valuables. Invent a drink called Wilpon Stole My Wallet.
Yeah. So I'm a great mixologist, but I like to follow the directions. So I had to go in and kind of find one that fit here. Not really a freestyler, but I found a drink that was just called Brooklyn. And it actually fits really well with the Wilpons and their ways as owners. See, a Brooklyn is a cocktail that mixes these two spirits that you would never normally mix. And that's rye whiskey and sweet vermouth. Like, you just don't mix those two, right? Like, they don't normally go together. And that's pretty much like having bad ownerships and championships, right? Like, they really just don't go together. Except this one, this Brooklyn, this one is all bottom shelf. So we can penny pinch in true Wilpon style. And it's named the Brooklyn because, well, the Wilpons are bigger Brooklyn Dodger fans than they are Mets fans. And so I think they still believe that they own the Brooklyn Dodgers. And so this drink would be just fitting for them.
Yeah, sounds like just the ticket. Well, that is my last scenario for you, and that means it's the end of the show. So for Aaron Pags and myself, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Nonsense. Aaron, anything you want to plug, talk about on the way out?
Of course, you can follow me at Fantasy Triage. Listen to our podcast with Nate Markham. It's Perfectly Framed. You can find it anywhere that podcasts are. And then, of course, I do a little bit of work at Big Guy Fantasy Sports for Bob Long and Baseball Consistency. And as always, fantasyandframes.com.
All right. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next time. Juice Balls is filmed in front of a live studio audience. Support for the program comes from the Baseball A-Team community on Patreon.com. Become a patron at patreon.com/baseballateam. Juice Balls is looking for a producer, show music, and conceptual ideas. Reach out on Twitter at Baseball A-Team or via the Baseball A-Team community on Discord.